Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Fireside Room, Lori Miller will be speaking on Jesus, Paul, and Purity Law. So let's listen in on Lori.
The tension in the early church about which foods were clean and unclean, and that is a very important part of the Purity Law in Leviticus, and I'll explain that a little bit. But first of all, what is purity? Purity law and purity systems are in all cultures, even today. Purity defines what makes a certain group. It's defined by what the group considers normal and acceptable. It not only says this is pure and this is dirty, but it helps define identity, and it defines what it means to be human in some ways. And I've used the example over and over again, one more time, that for a child in our culture, food on the plate is okay. Food on the clothes or on the hair is not okay, and that's what needs to be educated. And that's part of what is civilized, the civilizing of a child, is teaching them what's clean and what's dirty. It's taught, we learn what is pure and what is not pure. It varies from culture to culture. Joe Gray has talked a little bit about people eating foods in other cultures that we wouldn't dream of. There are people in some places and still eat insects that we would not eat. Usually we can define for ourselves where we're touching on a purity issue when we have a sense of revulsion or repugnance. And the example that Bill Countryman gives, by the way, this comes from his book, Dirt, Greed, and Sex. And if you're interested in this, they're available in paperback in the bookstore. But his great example of the epitome in our culture of repulsion because of a purity system is, it's okay to eat snails in a fancy restaurant, but have you ever imagined slugs on a plate? Another example that I've thought of recently was, I lived for a semester in Sweden when I was in college. And I remember, you know, there are all sorts of different foods that a lot of our, I was with a group of American students, and we would all sort of turn up our nose at certain things. Our tastes were different. But the one, I tried everything, and I actually grew to like almost everything, but there was one food that I tried a couple bites of, and that was it, and that was blood pudding. It's a sausage made of blood from cattle, and it's seasoned with cinnamon and spices, but the Swedes eat it regularly, and I was told at least once a month or so that it's better for you than liver. And so then I started thinking, well, why is it that eating the flesh of a dead animal is okay, but the blood is just like, ugh. You know, that's a purity code, and it varies from our culture to Sweden. Have you had it?
In Texas, it's a fairly common thing.
Oh, really? Wow! The foreign country of Texas.
But, I mean, was it cooked or was it raw?
No, it was cooked. It was cooked. You've had blood sausage.
Like,
oh, well, there you go, see?
But I mean, we fried, I mean, it's boiled, it's cooked.
Okay, this is how this is. It's called a pudding, but it's...
congealed almost.
Yeah, it's sort of quavery, but it's all...
it's like a
soft sausage.
Well,
that's
different.
I mean,
ours is the good old hill country.
Okay. Well, see, and there it's even interesting on how we cook it, you know. It's popular now in cities, and maybe everywhere, to eat sushi, raw fish. But, you know, I can remember a time in my life when the thought of eating raw fish was just, you know, that violated my purity code.
Famous grocery store down there, and they sell it at sushi. Now you can go in there and eat it right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll serve it down to the dining room there where you go and eat it.
So it's, but I dare say 20 years ago, probably for a lot of Americans, the idea of eating raw fish kind of turned your stomach. And maybe it still does.
A lot of people won't eat eyeballs, too.
Huh.
And I'm one of them.
I can't say that I've ever tried.
My housekeeper in Nicaragua used to cook up a hog's head every once in a while. I told her it was all right to cook the eyeballs, but don't serve them to me.
Yeah.
And she used to try to sneak them to me, thinking that if I tasted them, I'd like them.
You didn't. You knew.
I ate part of one, and when I turned it over, it stared at me.
See, and that's the thing. I mean, part of it is taste. But we do acquire tastes of things that we think are acceptable. And for things that we really just have a real hard time mentally, you know, something staring at you on the plate, you know, that's a hard thing. And I think that touches the purity issue. And as I said in the first class, for those of you who haven't been to one of the classes yet, I left out, I guess I said Jesus, Paul, and purity for this class. But one of my, I will just say flat out, one of the concerns I have in this class is that I think that in part some of the reaction against acceptance of homosexuals in our culture has to do with purity issues. And I described a reason that I believe that, which was when I was in college, a friend of mine, a young man my age, and I got in a conversation about homosexuality. We weren't talking about the Bible. We weren't even thinking of Scripture. But he was convinced that it was wrong, and that when he talked about it, his body language was so tense. You know, he would make sounds like, yuck. You know, I mean, the way when he imagined what a homosexual relationship would be, it just made him sick. He would describe it that way. And I thought, well, what is that? You know, I don't think this is just a moral stand that he has. There's something in him that reacts. So that is going to be part of the issue, not the entire focus. But I think this sheds, understanding purity helps shed some light on why this is such a difficult topic. Okay, I've explained a little bit about purity. And a short definition of what dirt would be in a purity system is dirt is matter out of place. So it may be okay in the bedroom, but don't talk about it outside the bedroom. It's out of place. Or maybe you can talk about it in the bathroom. But it's, you know, matter out of place is what is a purity system. Now, we talk a little bit about ancient Israel, and in around the 6th century before Christ, the priests finally wrote down the long code of the Torah, including the Ten Commandments, but also much longer, that spans parts of Genesis, Exodus, most of Leviticus, some in Numbers, and a little bit in Deuteronomy. But that was written down at a time when the ancient Israelites had a history of their understanding of God's promise being with them, and it was manifest in their king as representative of God's will. It was also demonstrated in their holy temple where they gathered to worship, and it was also their understanding of God's promise to them was evident in the fact that they had their own land, their own king, their own temple. In the 6th century before Christ, they were under pressure and were being defeated by Babylonia, and their leaders were being exiled, and their temple was destroyed, and their land was taken away. And so what happened at that point in time was they had to reshape their religious life so that there was still meaning and a new understanding of how God was present in their lives. And what happened was the religion became less focused on God as in this territory and more focused on what I do day to day in my religious practice. And that became the focus on the purity law and the Levitical code. So, for example, there are many, many things that there was not an expectation that a person could go through life clean. You couldn't. You could not be ever totally pure, because if you got wounded and shed blood, you were unclean, and there was a washing and perhaps a sacrifice to the priest, and you would then, at the end of that day, after washing your clothes and bathing yourself, you would be clean again. So it was an expectation there would be a period of time when people were unclean. But depending on how unclean you were, the longer your isolation would be and the more you would have to pay for sacrifice. For example, if you were a leper, you would be unclean until it was cured. Or, this is very interesting, and there's two things I've left out about purity. In the ancient Israelite code, the sense of purity had to do with wholeness. So that's why you were not supposed to, a priest could not have a broken leg or be blind or blemished in some way, because the priest had to be whole. A leper, this is so interesting, a leper was unclean unless the leprosy covered the whole body and was totally white. Then the leper was clean again, because it was all the kind. It's interesting. So there were two pieces to this code about purity for the ancient Israelites. Wholeness and not mixing kinds. One other thing about purity that I left out, that in any society's purity system, what is clean or unclean has to do with things like birth and death, shed blood, menstrual blood, sexual acts, and I think that's food and waste. I think that covers, so it's anything that comes in or out of the human body or crossing boundaries, which is what birth and death are about. So the law with the Levitical code was at first a gift for the ancient Israelites to live out their religious life on a day-to-day basis. But what happened is 600 years down the road after that, much had changed in their life. They were dispersed. Many Jews lived in the Roman Empire with other people of other cultures. And you can imagine practicing this law, this purity, cleanliness to the neighbors in some ways would have created tension, because they were seen as so different and so set apart, which was the purpose. But by the time of by first century AD, when Jesus appears on the scene, there had been a real splintering, and there were sects, S-E-C-T-S, that had different interpretations of how you needed to follow this law, including the Pharisees that we know about. The Pharisees were very much focused on food and how to prepare the food, whether it's clean or unclean, where you buy it, how you fix it, and most of all, who you eat with. Because you could have a totally pure table and right food and right setting and be clean, but if someone unclean came to your table, you were contaminated too. And and it was a serious matter, because that they felt like being right with God meant being pure. And so what happened among the Pharisees became a very elaborate network of associates of who they could eat with and who they couldn't, which I think sheds a lot of light when we read in the Gospels about why Jesus was so hard on the Pharisees. So now I want to move from there. That's all background. I'd like to move from there to find out, because today we're going to talk about Jesus and Paul and purity, because there is a shifting and a reforming of the whole idea of purity and cleanliness and what it takes to be right with God, which had probably been challenged and developing in those 600 years, but at Jesus' time, he challenged it very directly. And my theory is that was one of the reasons he was crucified, that he was, that challenging of the very essence for the religious leaders was not taken too kindly. So I'd like to just begin by asking you all, what you know, if you think back on parables and stories and sayings of Jesus, you probably already know a lot about what Jesus said about purity. And I'd just like to begin by asking if you can remember anything that Jesus said or in his parables that may have had to do with purity. And clue, you can think about in terms of, did it have anything that has to do with death or birth or blood or food? Those are clues. And I'm learning now as I read the Gospels, this whole concept really alerts me when I'm reading those passages in all the Gospels.
Jesus said in essence that the old laws that governed the Jews were no longer applicable. That they asked him what law was applicable. And he said, love your God and love your neighbor as yourself.
That's good. That's very good. And that's in a couple of the synoptics. Anyone else think of some thought sayings or teachings of Jesus?
So much of it was just so opposite of what they believed in. I think of the I'm the bread of life. Mm-hmm. Drink my blood, eat my flesh. That was so abhorrible to them. Yet it seems like a lot of the things that he tried to say were put in those terms almost to be shocking that was the way of warning.
He said, blessed are the pure in heart.
Good. So purity of heart. He's not talking about, he doesn't say, blessed are those who eat at pure tables. He says, blessed are the pure. That's good. What else?
Lori, the dark side of purity is shame. And if you think about the way we deal with small children and socializing, that you should be ashamed of yourself because you did this, that, and the other thing. And I've been struck in recent months in some of my studies of the important way in which God and Jesus defied shame. And Jesus was born into sociological shame. It looked like Mary had been messing around.
Yes.
And he died in shame. And there's this wonderful phrase in the 12th chapter of Hebrews that says, Jesus, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising its shame.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of Jesus and purity and shame, there's this tremendous sense of God despising the shame of purity.
That is really very important. And what's interesting is in the culture in which Jesus lived, I mean, we know shame and don't want to be ashamed today, but in that time, shame and honor were very, very important to the culture. One of the things about a family, a large family, was you did not do something that would bring shame to your family. And so it was even more powerful than it would be today for him to despise shame. That's good. Can you read this?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard in here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Associating with and eating with people who were not pure.
Good. That's good.
Prostitutes and sick people.
It's very good. In fact, In several of the Gospels, he touches corpses to bring them back to life. But, you know, that was not a pure thing to do. It's so interesting. You can just imagine it making people so angry. And one interesting thing, tax collectors. I kept wondering, well, you know, what's so unclean about a tax collector? Finally, this book helped me understand that in the Mishnah, which the Mishnah are commentaries on Hebrew scripture. And the Pharisees were experts. They wrote a lot of the Mishnah, which Jewish people still use. But it would be sort of like reading commentaries on scripture today, except that it becomes handed down over a long period of time. Anyway, the Mishnah says the tax collectors are unclean, and he uses that language. So in a sense, tax collectors are on the same level as prostitutes and Gentiles, people who just aren't clean. I left that out too. Gentiles, there was no way a Gentile could be clean. Gentiles were just, and it wasn't that Jews would have looked down and like thought scum. It's just that they would be and understood that they were separate and that there was no crossing of boundaries. And that circumcision was the defining difference. Any others?
Jesus also made a strong case for using common sense instead of obeying the law literally.
Mm-hmm.
He said, if an ox falls in the well on Sunday, yeah, haul it out.
Yeah.
not only lose the wall, but the ox, but poison the well if you leave it in there.
Right. So not the letter of the law.
Well, if someone were to observe all those laws, they didn't only affect that person who had, I was reading about the a young adult and adolescent. It wasn't only he who was affected, but whoever made his bed or touched him or right, he spit on him, or they had
right,
to go through.
That's right.
So there was no way that they had to occupy all their time with law.
You can think that, and it's helpful when you think in Jesus' time, if you were, let's say you weren't a Pharisee, you are just a Jewish person in first century, wanting to live a holy life. And the Pharisees are your religious leaders. And what the Pharisees are saying is, you know, really, we Pharisees are the only true holy people because we observe proper cleanliness. And you others are eating with people who aren't clean. So even though you're trying, you're not quite clean enough. And so you can imagine how the kind of barriers that made it and how it broke down relationship because people were so concerned with the externals. That's good. Anything else? Any other things you can think of? I think you've really hit the major broad strokes of what Jesus had to say. And what's interesting is, we'll talk a little bit about the different Gospels. When we say Jesus said or Jesus taught this, we know that each one of those sayings or teachings comes through the filter of a particular Gospel writer. So we have different angles on Jesus in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Each Gospel writer has a little different understanding of who Jesus was addressing and what the main concerns were. What's interesting about this issue of purity is that even though each of the Gospels has a little different focus, there is a common theme throughout all of them together, despite the differences, that Jesus came to challenge the focus on the externals of religion and to call people to purity of heart, to let their how they treat each other and how they behave toward each other and how their interior is, that's what the cleanliness is about. And in fact, physical purity, while it could still be practiced by some people, was no longer the way you have access to God. So if you look at all four Gospels, you see that, I'm kind of giving it away, I was going to give you a chance to look things up. So I'll recap that in a minute. Why don't you, does everyone have a Bible? And I can pass it. Who needs a Bible?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. anyone else need files? What I'd like you to do is to group. See, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Perfect. I'd like you to get into 3 groups of 4. So can you just kind of arrange your chairs so that you're in. Okay, I'm going to ask this group over here to be Matthew. Is that right? I need 4 groups of 3. I'm sorry. So you actually need to be in 4 groups, not 3.
4 groups of 3. 3. You got it right.
I got it right.
Yeah. 4 groups.
That's good. I need 4 groups and 3 in them. Okay. I thought I said it the other way. Okay. So I'd like you 3 to look up these scriptures under Matthew. And all of those have to do with purity. And we may have already mentioned some of the scriptures, but I'd like you to just look at those and see if there's anything new in there.
Oh, I'd like to read them and see.
Okay, that's yeah. So, and I'll have you all be. All right, so you 3 group. You 3 be in the back, be Mark. And then you 3 read the Luke passages. Mm-hmm. And you 3 read the John passages. Mm-hmm. And they're all. Can you see okay? So I'll give you a few minutes to just look those passages up, and I'd like one person in each group to be able to report back to all of us any new sayings or teachings of Jesus that you haven't connected with purity before. And actually, I've put starting verse 10 of chapter 9 of Matthew, but if you look at verse 9, there's something interesting there too. You know what? I've made a mistake on the John. I'm sorry. This should be 11:13. That might help.
What
about 13:10 on Mark? I don't get the connection.
Let's see.
Yeah, if you see anything else that doesn't make sense, let me. Oh, well, that one would be because he's talking about all the nations, which would include Gentiles. So that's a little obscure. But yeah, that would have been pretty radical. But it might help with just each one. Let's just go down the list, and you can tell me what it was about and how it related. How about the Matthew 9:9-13? Anyone look that up? Can you just maybe someone read the passage?
As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax office. And he said to him, "Follow me," and he rose and followed him. And as he sat at a table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard it, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous but sinners."
What leaps out of there for me is mercy, not sacrifice. Sacrifice, we think of sacrifice of going the extra mile or, you know, self-sacrifice. But in fact, the people who heard this would have thought temple sacrifice. And Jesus is saying, "I don't want sacrifice. I want mercy." So it was that inner purity. Also, did you get the thing in verse 9? That probably this was the Matthew, the disciple, who was a tax collector. So that probably was not looking very reputable to the community. Okay, someone want to read 15, or you don't have to actually read all of it, if you could just summarize what 15, 5 through 20 is about. Or I'll tell you what, how about this? Might be a little faster if anyone from the other groups has looked up a passage and you just want to summarize. Yeah.
I think that a verse of Mark 7, 6, and he said to them, well, did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites as it is written? This people honors me with their lips, with their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines of precepts of men. You leave the commandment of God and hold fast the traditions of men. Mm-hmm. And he said to them, you have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to keep your tradition. In other words, there were laws of made by men, not by God.
That they, at some point, had taken the law and made it to fit them and was ignoring the real purpose and the real heart of it. Thank you, that's good. Any others? The scriptures you looked up that you'd like to?
In Luke 37:44, it's a similar situation where here Jesus is going to sit down at the table with the Pharisees and do their custom, and his people kind of got upset about it.
So the table custom, he's violating that very heart of the Pharisaic tradition.
And he retorts that you're just paying attention to the surface, not the inside.
Is that the one where he talks about washing only the outside of the plate and bowl? It's really graphic. And what's interesting is you do find, it was mentioned earlier about eating flesh and drinking blood. Was there anything else from John? Any other scriptures that you noticed?
The first one is about Lazarus. Mm-hmm. There seems to have been some confusion about whether he was dead or whether he was still asleep.
And if he appeared dead, the uncleanness thing would have been that he was a corpse. And it may have even, does Jesus go into the tomb? Oh, he calls him out, doesn't he? Because I'm thinking for Jesus to have even just gone into the tomb would have been unclean, but I think he just stood out.
Going back to Matthew 9:15-20, there he tells Pharisees that the things that go into the mouth and go into the belly, but it's the things that come out of your mouth that are false and blaspheming.
Right. And does he say out of the mouth, or does he just say what comes out? Does he? And the reason I think it's important to make that distinction is...
No, it says proceed out of the mouth, come forth from the heart, and they defy the man.
Okay.
Evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornication, thefts, false witness, and blasphemy.
Okay. So he's basically saying it's the behavior. It's what you do that matters.
It's what comes out.
Right.
Because what goes into you can't hurt. You can't hurt anybody.
Right.
But it's what you tell somebody.
Can you think of what a big distinction this would have been for people who have had such a long history and spent so much time? And can you imagine, I don't know if any of you have been around seminary circles or graduate school and you start, or anyone, discussing religion and theology, and you have these lofty discussions. If you can imagine the tradition and all of these lofty discussions being about the details of purity, and that this was it. And then for Jesus to be saying, not only saying, but associating with unclean people, and then standing and preaching that It's what comes out. It's what you do rather than what you're eating or how you're eating or who you're touching. That would have really been a big shift for people. And I imagine in some ways it would have been a relief for some people, particularly if you think that they were with Gentiles with whom they were working and trading, and their lives had to have mixed in some way because that's where they lived. And now to be told, you know, this gospel is for the Gentiles. In fact, it's the prostitute, I forget which scripture it is now, one of them, it's the prostitutes and tax collectors, they're going to be first in the kingdom before the clean people. So I like to think, okay, what does that mean today?
later on, Peter kept telling people that even though you're Gentiles, you're going to have to follow the Mosaic laws if you're going to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. And so he had that famous dream.
Right.
And if he hadn't had that famous dream, there may not have been Christianity in our world.
That's the story of Peter and the vision and visiting Cornelius and having a vision in which he sees that it's okay to eat animals that have been not been sacrificed, that all the food is there. And I'll get into a little bit more of what that was about in the time after Jesus, when the early church was. This was great controversy. When Karen spoke yesterday on the issue of why there's warfare over homosexuality, the room was packed. And someone brought up the analogy to, well, Galileo once suggested that the world was round, and that was heresy, and now the church is finally admitting after all these years it was okay. But I thought, in the same way, the early church had this issue of clean and unclean food, and you can imagine it caused great division and fear and people's sense of solid ground in their religious community was shaken. I put here just quick summary. Not all of the Gospels, as I said, they each have their own angle on what Jesus said about the issue of purity. And you brought up something interesting yesterday, and I think it's in Matthew, I think, where it has the different, four mothers of Jesus.
The genealogy.
At the beginning of Matthew, it's very interesting. It shows, as Jesus' ancestors, if you want to look in the first chapter of Matthew, it lists Rahab, who was a harlot, who protected the Israelite spies. But she's listed as Jesus' foremother, Bathsheba. And it doesn't even name Bathsheba. It says the wife of Uriah. So the shadow of adultery is there. Tamar, who tripped her father, I believe, brother-in-law. So that there was the shadow of incest in that. And the final one, Ruth, who had sexual relationships with Boaz probably before it was legal. And so all of these women are listed as the foremothers of Jesus. And what's interesting is that Matthew does not totally do, Matthew's version of Jesus speaking doesn't totally do away with purity, but it shows that purity is one of those issues that tends to skew what the conversation is about away from mercy and justice, and focus on the externals. Mark is the most radical. I don't know if any of you have been going to Jan's Bible study, but there's a lot of overlap here, isn't there? And basically this, one of her titles is called Busting the Barriers. And this is the most radical, in which Jesus basically doesn't have any use for the purity laws. Luke is, I think, probably the most conservative of the three in terms of purity. it doesn't obliterate purity, but again, it says that if there's a focus on the externals of religion, and it also includes not just purity, but tithing, purity, and I forget what the other one is, but anything, public prayer, anything that's public, the external, can obscure the corrupt motives. And, you know, we've seen that. I think somehow that's kind of come up with Jim and Tammy Baker. And I mean, that's an extreme case. And then finally, John, which, it's interesting, this is the only gospel that addresses purity around the body and blood, flesh and drinking, eating flesh and drinking blood. But what John does is shows that it's through impure things that we have access to God. And that way it was very challenging.
Because I don't know John very well, 3:22-25, after this Jesus and his disciples went into the land of Judea, there he remained with them and baptized. Is that going into the Gentiles?
Actually, no, but that's included because it's showing the other side that he's baptizing, which is a purification ritual. And in John, it shows him using some of the purification images, but for a new way of thinking and a new realm. Any other questions on the scripture?
In reading the Mark 5:25, etc., the woman with the flow of blood and Jesus' encounter with her, I mean, obviously the levels of purity not only to lose about blood, but you know, in terms of his name, like the woman, or having contact with. It occurred to me that, you know, the climax of that whole thing is, you know, Jesus saying to her, your faith has made you well. And putting an emphasis on faith. Somehow, as I was reading it, it occurred to me the way in which faith becomes so key, particularly in terms of the person who's treated as Kibbutz, which he clearly had been. And, you know, normally we think of it as, you know, the faith healing, etc. But to what degree it was also her faith that made her strong in the midst of, you know, the continuing taboos and suspicions and you know, how key that also becomes for people that are treated to do in our culture.
So it's sort of like the ability to persist and stay strong, even despite
that, you know, is that alongside, you know, whatever physical there may or may not have been.
That's very good.
To stand in the face of the taboos that were very much part of that culture.
That goes along with some other characters, like the Syrophoenician woman who persists with Jesus and, you know, says, heal my daughter. And Jesus says, well, no, you're... And this is a really kind of puzzling one, because he doesn't seem to accept her, and she's Gentile. But she persists, and then finally says... She says, even the dogs under the table get the crumbs. You know, give me the crumbs. And again, he says something like, your faith also has saved you. And I think maybe there's just some real truth to that if you look at people today, people who persist. You have to really, I know that I have met people whose continuing openness to people who have excluded them is a real testimony of faith. They care so much that they're hanging in there, and that's a real blessing for me. Okay, I'm going to just move really quickly into what Paul had to say about this. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of time, and I'm going fast. But before I forget, if you weren't here, or if you were and you want some more information on what purity is, I've got a handout here that summarizes the introduction of the first chapter of Bill Countryman's book, so it may help. And also, if you're planning on coming back on Saturday, Or if you're just interested in current purity issues, over the last year, my husband and I have collected articles from the newspaper and magazines that we thought, we made a judgment it's a purity issue. You may not agree, but I think it's very interesting reading, and there's plenty here. I thought they said in the flyer for teachers to bring 30 or 40 copies, so I've got plenty. But I invite you to take these, and what I'll do on Saturday is we'll have a chance just to discuss these. And it's, I have to say, one of the articles we cut out was on the Lutheran Church study on sexuality, and Karen Lindquist is quoted. And that was before I knew her. So I'll let you just take those as you leave. So as we saw, even though there's different twists on it, the upshot of Jesus' teaching that we get through the Gospels is that while purity may still be important for people who identify themselves with Judaism, physical purity is no longer a barrier to God. That does not apply anymore. Now, things shifted a little bit when it went from after Jesus died and as the church developed. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about the writings and influence of Paul. Paul takes it a step farther. He says that, and this is because of the controversy in the early church, with some people needing their food a certain way and others not. And that's where his discussion on the strong and the weak come about. And he says, no longer do you have to have pure food and eat in a clean way, but if you're in a community where for some people physical purity is a big issue, he considered the people who needed the food laws to be the weak, and the people who didn't need the food laws to be the strong. And he asked for the strong to bear with the weak, to respect that. And so we can see that what's interesting is there's not a whole lot, if you compare what Paul writes about food and the controversy of food in the early church, and you compare that to controversy about sexuality, you're going to find there's not a whole lot about sex. There's a whole lot about food, which I find very interesting. It shows where the purity issues were. If you look at the entirety of Paul's writings, you find that sexual purity is not the focus, but that living peaceably in the community, forbearing with each other, bearing each other's burdens. And he links uncleanness with greed. The Greek word is pleonexia. And what that means is lusting for more than your fair share. And there's a lot about that sort of uncleanness. Mostly in 1 Thessalonians, but also it's also in Colossians and Ephesians, which Paul, we don't know that Paul wrote those letters, but that was still the trend. Pleonexia was associated with uncleanness, license, and greed. It was the abandonment of restraint and abandonment of concern for the rights of others. Pleonexia was social greed and other wrongs that create discord. So for Paul, impurity was competitive greed. I find this very challenging. I mean, I think it's very interesting that is in our tradition and in our present, when we think of sin, sex. and we also sometimes think food, you know, that's sort of the popular cultural thing. When do you ever see the word sinful It's usually associated with chocolate or dessert, or you know, decadence. You know, it's chocolate and food, and it is associated with sexuality. And yet, if you look at the entirety of the gospel and epistle writings, there is more of a concern for social greed and what disrupts the unity of the church than there is on sexuality. Of course, a little aside, in a community, sexual crossing the boundary sexually creates discord and disunity. And so there's that angle on it. But the strongest words are for those who are wanting more than their share, and it affects the others. A general principle for Paul is that nothing is unclean in and of itself. And we see a lot about that in terms of food. Oh gosh, we're out of time. Well, okay, I've left out the really important passage in Romans which talks about homosexual acts and sin. And that's pretty important because it's used a lot. It's understood to be the place where in the New Testament we know that homosexuality is wrong. Bill Countryman, I recommend in his book, does a very, very thorough study of the context and the words. And what I think I'll do tomorrow is I'll just spend a little bit of time at the very beginning laying that out. So if you know anyone who hasn't been here yet who would be interested in that, invite them to come tomorrow. And thank you.